Anyway, you're about to meet Ed Dames. Ed Dames is a remote viewer. He was in the U.S. government's remote viewing program that ran for about 20 years. What he is about to tell you is going to scare the hell out of you. But that's Ed Dames for you. They didn't call him Dr. Doom back then for nothing. He's really something. Now, I'm just going to issue the standard warning. If hearing this kind of predictive material, whether it be by remote viewing or prophecy or any other way that it is delivered on my program, bothers you or scares you, then turn your radio off. If there are young children in the room, get them out of the room. Some of what you're going to hear is not going to be appropriate for their ears and maybe not even for yours. So I really do mean it when I say that. It's a big caution. I'm giving you time to get the kids out of the room. I'm giving you time to decide if you want to hear what Ed's going to say. And so with that caution applied, I guess I've been interviewing Ed Dames now for, Ed, how long?
2 years.
2 years we've been talking and doing interviews on the air, huh?
Yes.
Okay, let me give one more little preface here for the New York audience that just joined us. Last Thursday and Friday, I was not here. I was sick, really sick. I had a stomach intestinal flu of some kind. I had a temperature, and so I was gone. Now, on Thursday, I got a fax from Ed Dames, Major Ed Dames, man I just almost brought on there and then took off because I want to tell you this. On Thursday, in the middle of my misery, I got a fax from Ed that essentially said, Art, look, I've got a very, very important warning and announcement for your listeners, and I can either type it up and you can read it to them, or I can briefly come on the air and tell them about it. And since you have no guess, what about it? Well, I didn't respond to him Thursday because I was sick. And earlier today, he sent me a second fax, and not having a guess lined up, I said, well, yeah, sure, let's do it. But I wanted you to know, you can believe me, because I'm telling you, the first word I had of this came last Thursday from Ed. He wanted to get this on the air last Thursday, but because I was sick, it's now going to get on the air tonight. Is that all accurate, Ed?
It is, Art.
Okay. So, what the hell? The market took a deep dive. It's in trouble, obviously. We're in economic trouble. It may or may not get better tomorrow. Our president is in Russia. Korea's sending missiles over Japan. What the hell, Ed?
Well, to us at SciTech, this is just data, just information. You know that it's been a year and a half to 2 years ago that we on your radio program, we flat out said in late spring or summer of 1998 there would be a global economic collapse. It's here.
I remember.
Yeah.
And you're saying it's here now?
It's here. It's on us. And, of course, the markets reflect that first. But it's more than just the markets. It's much more. There's geopolitical and ecological forces behind this. So when we say global economic collapse, we don't just mean a market meltdown. There's much more to say about that. Also, you used the term prediction and forecast. Predictions and forecasts really are a function of analysis. One takes information and then projects forward or extrapolates data and then forecasts an outcome, projected outcome.
Based on current events.
Current events or an ensemble of data over time. That's not what we do.
I know.
Technical remote viewing is direct knowledge. So when our outlook for the future is based upon actually downloading data connected with an event that already exists in time over the horizon. That's what we were looking at when we 2 years ago when we saw this collapse in late spring, summer of 98. the unthinkable occurring. We've gotten many letters from people who have thanked us because we forewarned them, they got out of the markets. Mm-hmm. But I called you, actually I faxed you last week because those self-same people and others are about to make or may have already made a mistake. And the money that they save by pulling out, withdrawing from the stock market, they may be throwing away somewhere else. And that was the gist of this fax and this alert that I wanted to get out to the listeners.
So there's no easy way to lay this out. What you believe is going to occur, based on what you've seen, is that the United States government, in effect, is going to default. Is that right?
That's correct. It's the second unthinkable in terms of the financial information. The first one being the economic collapse that people thought was a very laughable thing because of the robust U.S. economy, blah, blah, blah. But nevertheless, it's right there in front of us when we look at it in terms of technical remote viewing. There it is. We take what we get. The second unthinkable is what I wanted, is the warning that I wanted to issue to your listeners. And that is that many, many people are running to the perceived haven, the shelter of these long-term U.S. government securities.
Bonds.
Yes, bonds.
The bond yield keeps falling as more and more people run to bonds. It's called flight to quality.
Correct.
And they're pulling money out of the market and saying, no, I'm going to park it in bonds.
Correct. Both Americans and foreigners.
Yep.
In U.S. long-term bonds.
A lot of foreigners own U.S. bonds.
They own them a lot. In fact, many of them will probably, Japanese will probably end up selling much of them to get the capital that they need to
cover their own butts, yeah.
But my warning is this. The United States government is going to default on those, both the interest payments and possibly the bond, paying back the bonds itself. So that is no longer a shelter or haven. That is how bad this collapse is going to be.
Well, if it goes that far, Ed, then we'll have a new government.
We will definitely have a new government. I've told you before that Clinton will not complete this term. We still stand by that. And it's becoming self-evident, I think, to a lot of people as the months go on. But we mentioned that last year. And it's actually something that, as remote viewers, as in SciTech, we knew 4 years ago. But we didn't publicly state this.
Why not?
It's just bad business, Art. There's other things that we keep a lid on. For instance, we know of one very high U.S. official who will die a natural death in office. And that data is very solid, but we're not going to talk about that. It's just not something that you do.
I'm with you.
And we're not going to do that. And I want the listeners who have, at least the ones who have followed SciTech's data, to remember that the experts they have been wrong and they're still wrong, and or they're being disingenuous when they say that the current reaction in the U.S. market is just an overreaction to the Russian situation. Don't swallow that. That the U.S. economy appears to be strong.
I'm not swallowing that it's an overreaction to Russia, nor that it's an overreaction to Asia.
The U.S. economy appears to be strong, but in fact, it's eroding hourly, and it's going to topple.
Well,
this is going to get up close and personal for us in America. It's already up close and personal to many other nations. But we've been pretty blessed for many years. Now it's the waters are going to get rough.
All right. Let me get waters rough here between you and I for just a second, all right? Ed, have you been wrong before?
In one instance, and a report that we did for a client in 1990, yes.
You made a prediction about the sun, our sun, on the program. I can't remember how long ago you made this. I think it was actually over two shows in which you said there would be a shot over the bow, in other words, a big giant flare or ejector from the sun, and that would be the shot over the bow, and then there would be a kill shot.
Correct.
Now, regarding the timing of that, you may already, I don't know if I'm remembering correctly yet, but you may already be wrong about the timing of that. Now, what I do know is that there's big-time disruptions going on now on our sun. We've been having X-class flare after X-class flare. We've been having ejecta. We've been having solar storms. I'm getting reports of compass deviations. But there certainly has not been what would yet be called a kill shot. So what is your prediction timeline for that? Has the shot over the bow been fired, or did you simply miss the timeline on that one a little bit?
We don't think that the shot over the bow has been fired. In our estimate, sometime between late December of last year and late spring of this year, there would be what we called a precursor event.
Did that occur?
No, I do not believe it occurred, because the data that was connected, the technical remote viewing data that was connected with that event, indicated that many, many people would be patently aware of the event when it occurred. That probably meant satellite outages, power outages, and those kinds of things.
Right.
And that indeed has not happened, even though the flare last week was quite serious. Unless you had been following that, you would not know that something was acting up with the sun.
Okay, well, we're now at the end of August and almost the beginning of September. So would that qualify then as a miss in terms of timeline? Do you still believe it's going to occur? Where do you stand on that one?
We adamantly stand by the kill shot. We adamantly stand by that. That being an extremely deadly event that emanates from our own sun, that we predicted would be ballpark around April of 1999, April around Easter of next year. And it's a ballpark figure. But what I'm looking at now, of course the sun is a very complex thing, a complex entity.
Sure.
And the sun-earth system is a complex system. But what is starting to bother me is we monitor the sun and geophysical things using TRV quite often. And it is always the sun that is the most deadly, the most doom-laden thing out on the horizon, the sun. What I'm looking at now, in fact, if your listeners go to our webpage, hit links, and look at Project Sunburst, there's a link in there that says Today's Space Weather. It's a NASA link. If you look at the X-ray flux...
I think we've got a link up to you probably on our front page right now. So if you just go down to the name Ed Dames and click, over you will go. Will that cover it if they get to your website?
It'll cover that, but after the break, I'll talk about this X-ray flux.
All right, good enough. We've also... Oh, well, I'll tell you, we have been getting some X-ray radiation from the sun. There's no question about that. If you've got a Geiger counter and do background, you know about that already. So Ed Dames is my guest. Again, I warn you, what you're going to hear tonight, with good reason, should worry you. And if you don't want to hear it, turn your radio off. Right. Here's the only positive facts I've been able to find regarding the Japanese Nikkei close. It is the only Asian market, in fact, ending with a gain today. And I think the rumors have some merit of intervention. That's just my opinion. Now, that said, the factor goes on to say the Tuesday New York Stock Exchange opening is going to be higher on the bell, because the overnight trading on the S&P futures is up. But to this factor, I would point out that the S&P futures were up on Sunday night, Monday morning, before this bloodbath. So that's not necessarily an indicator of what's going to happen. I guess if you want to think positive, you can sure think that it might be so, and it might be so. But the S&P futures being up right now surely does not guarantee an up day for Wall Street, though we can all hope. Now, Ed Dames is here. And as I said, they don't call him Dr. Doom for nothing. Ed's just getting started. Ed, welcome back.
Thank you.
Ed, when was it that you predicted that the next nuke used in anger would be North Korea?
About 10 months ago, I believe.
About 10 months ago, huh?
Yes.
Have you ever talked to Richard Hoagland?
No.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with his Mars data.
Right.
And but I have not talked with him. Many years ago, we offered to remote view some of what he called artifacts on Mars, but he did not avail himself of that offer.
All right. Then in that case, this will be the first time that the two of you actually have spoken, I guess. Here is Richard Hoagland, and he's got some news of his own. Richard, it's been too long. How you doing?
Good evening, Art.
And Ed's here, too.
And hi, Ed.
Hi.
We have not talked. Our paths have crossed very close many times. Yeah, the reason I sent you this note tonight, Art, is that I've been working since Saturday morning on something that looks initially extremely tangential, but in fact appears to be converging on the topic tonight and on events in the world, both east and west.
All right.
We have a president, as you have laid out, who seemingly is off on a wild goose chase into Moscow.
While the barn burns.
Well, the barn burning here appears to be traceable in part to events going on in Moscow.
In part.
Okay. I have been, as you know, pursuing a kind of a broad front investigation, looking at NASA, looking at potential, I'll use the C word, conspiracies by a small cadre. As this investigation has proceeded, we have brought more and more people into our orbit, including some very reliable former NSA people.
Right.
Some of whom actually may know Ed personally, and maybe not. Beginning in the last couple of weeks with the incredible debacle in Washington, we have been very focused on trying to penetrate the agenda underneath what's on CNN. And as you know from a couple of faxes I sent you, we have a very interesting thread of evidence that at some point I would like to present. That would be tangential to tonight. What really has focused me on the events of the last 12 hours is that I worked, as you know, closely with David Oates since you did the first reversals with him on the NASA guys about a year ago.
Yep.
And David and I have kept in touch on things that I felt were relevant to our investigation. And I specifically had him tape a lot of things before the weekend having to do with press conferences, Albright, the National Security Advisor, the head of the FBI, and Muammar Gaddafi. Because as you know, we're looking in part at things that seem to stem from the Middle East, from Egypt.
Well, okay, no offense here, Richard, but I'm going to have to ask you to hurry.
Okay.
I'm going to have to say that what you sent me in a fax had nothing to do with reverse speech, at least according to the facts. What you said is
well,
that you
have...
Well,
if you look at the bottom of the second page, in fact, it does. That's what tipped me off to talk to my NSA sources who confirmed what is...
Okay, that's what I want to get to.
Okay.
You've got NSA sources.
Yes.
That say what?
All right. They say that today's Korean missile test was not a test, that in fact it was a failed attempt to take out a Japanese nuclear reactor, and for some reason two shots, not one missile, but two, failed.
It was two missiles?
Missiles.
At first I heard it was a single-stage missile, they reported, that came down in between Korea and Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Then the latter report said, no, it was a two-stage missile. Stage one went in between Korea and Japan, and stage two went over Japanese airspace and into the drink.
Well, I mean, look, if you haven't declared war against Japan, does it make any sense that you're going to fire a missile that you know is going to go over? I mean, your Cuba, Florida analogy was very appropriate.
So what you're saying is you've got, I'm sorry,
my sources
reverse speech is very cute, but I don't want to make this kind of announcement based on somebody's reverse speech. If you have NSA sources saying these were two attempts to explode a Japanese reactor,
yes,
then that's a fish of a different color.
Which, of course, really brought up Ed. Because if you were successful, you would have a nuclear event in the Far East triggered by the Japanese. Speaking about the North Koreans, and there would obviously be some kind of response and his ally, which is us.
Boy, that's a hell of a thing to say.
And this gets back to Gaddafi, is that Gaddafi is calling for a nuclear Hajj, and a majority of the population in North Korea, Art, is Muslim.
Yes, I'm aware.
He is also in cahoots with a key general in Moscow. He is calling for a coup of the comrades, and there is a specific reference to they are going for the president.
Yeah, I would say that's quite likely in view of the fact that last time Parliament didn't do what Yeltsin wanted, he had tanks there shelling it and blew them to smithereens and won that way. Now, with the rejection of the prime minister, he might be tempted to do exactly the same thing, only this time they're going to imagine he's going to do it, and they're going to try and act first.
Well, we have a president over there tonight in a very touchy situation.
Yeah, I don't think he ought to be there.
We have from Lebedev 100 nukes, suitcase nukes, somewhere running around the Soviet Union. All it would take is one, and suddenly we are decapitated.
Yeah.
And this is a situation that needs to be considered. Given the accuracy of the obvious Korean discussion that Ed had 10 months ago, given the Muslim component of the population, given the fragility of the world economies and what would happen if there was a successful assassination attempt that not only destabilized the Soviet Union or Russia, but also took out, you know, the head of our government simultaneously. The time frame, by the way, according to our analysis of the calendar we keep working on, the critical time period is Thursday morning, which is when they are going to have a joint news conference in Moscow.
That's correct.
If I were recommending things to this president, I would say get on Air Force One and get out of there now.
Yeah, that's my instinct as well. Richard, thank you. Before you leave, Ed, obviously you have not done any work on an event that occurred just hours ago, the firing of this missile or missiles.
Let me say two things.
All right.
First thing is, if you're a military power, like North Koreans, and you would like to hit a nuclear reactor downrange somewhere, you need to test your missiles to make sure that they can hit a pinpoint target. You've got to do some testing of your equipment. If you look at North Korea on the globe, you'll see that if you've got a missile that has to be tested, a medium-range ballistic missile or an intercontinental ballistic missile, where they're positioned, it's got to fly over somebody. Now, you could test it and fire it to the west, and it would land in China. If you fire it to the north, it would land in Russia. If you fire it to the south in the East China Sea, and maybe miss Okinawa and Taiwan and the Philippines, if you're lucky, or you could fire it to the east and try to get it between Hokkaido and Honshu through that narrow channel. It's still Japanese territory, but it's less risky than firing direction.
If you wanted to fire it into the ocean, Ed, you could fire roughly south and east and have a pretty good chance of bringing it down in water.
That's right, but I mean, my point is that you have to test it, and that's a much safer direction for North Korea to test their missiles than the other two directions, north and west, number one. Number two is, I had an office in the NSA as well as all the other intelligence agencies. Anybody that talked to Richard from NSA would already tonight be behind bars. They would have lost their job and be facing a much longer jail time than this evening.
Richard,
I didn't say they were current. I said they were former, okay?
Well, then they didn't. If they were former, they have no access to current intelligence.
You don't know my sources unless you're going to sit down.
I know NSA like the back of my hand, Richard. That's jail time.
Well, I'm afraid that you're not accurate on this one.
Then I guess the counterintelligence of NSA doesn't watch their people.
And maybe the system is breaking down. Look at the world. The system is breaking down, Ed.
Well,
all around.
I don't think you'll find Ed disagreeing with that.
People are scared. People are beginning to talk because it's not working. The chain of command is not working. It's unraveling all around us.
Any comment on that, Ed?
Yes. People who are trained to fight a war and to produce intelligence in wartime, that's exactly what they do for a living. They're trained to make the system work in times of absolute chaos.
And maybe the system is lying to them. Maybe they have decided that the Constitution is being abridged in ways they never imagined.
Well, Ed, yourself, before Richard got on, you said that there's going to be a default. And my response to that was, well, then there's going to be a new government. And you said, yes, and more than that. So in a way, the unwinding, as a general comment, is pretty much on the mark, right?
No, I think it's a very qualified comment. And when I say government, well, we didn't expand upon that. What I meant was a political system.
Yeah,
we're going to have new political leaders.
Well, that's what I'd call a pretty damn big change.
By the way, a majority of the Soviet army, the former Soviet army, is Muslim.
That's also true. That's also true. All right, Richard, thank you.
Thank you, Art.
Thank you for the report. And so your position on this, Ed, is that you don't buy it. You think it was a test.
Let me tell you, when President Clinton came into office, those of us in the military, we did not brief the President of the United States on anything because we knew he was a transient event. He was not one of ours, like George Bush, like Ronald Reagan.
Yep. Well, I can believe that.
That happens to be the truth. And we kept him in the dark on a lot of things because he was a loose cannon. And he was not a supporter of the system. He didn't know what to ask for, and so we didn't tell him. I'm using we in a general sense. Is that wrong or right? It's probably wrong, but it also happens to be fact.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think that the powers that be, whether they be NSA or whoever's running the show overall, would regard this president as transient and not friendly to national security matters, and they might not have told him squat.
Well, they told him some things. They told him, they provided him information that enough to give him what he wanted. But there are long-term projects in this government that span many different presidencies, and they continue. And those kinds of projects are usually pretty close hold, even in this country's military.
So you believe then that what Korea did earlier was indeed a two-stage test?
Yes, I believe it was a two-stage test, and I make no sense out of the idea that Richard had that it was targeted against a reactor.
Okay.
They could not have hit a reactor. They don't have that kind of accuracy. What they're trying for now is just to get their systems to work.
No, but you've got to admit, it's just a ballistic missile is just something that goes up in an arc and comes back down. That is the meaning of the word ballistic.
Yeah, it's like a V2 or a V1.
Yeah, up and down, right?
That's correct.
So you've got to admit, at the very least, that firing this thing in the direction of Japan was a pretty damn risky thing to do, because that second stage, even if it had nothing on it whatsoever, could have come down on Japanese property, and that would have been real bad news.
I disagree. As far as the North Koreans are concerned,
yeah,
it would have been far worse news if it came down on Russian or Chinese property.
Well, I don't know. I would imagine there would be a quick communication from North Korea to the Chinese. Sorry, big mistake. Russia, that's a different story. You bring it down in Russian territory, and with the state of Russia right now, you're going to get a nuclear answer. So that would have been real bad news. I might not agree with you on China. China and North Korea are kind of buddy-buddy, aren't they?
And they used to be, but China is becoming very antsy about the North Korean situation, because North Korea is an accident waiting to happen. The entire nation is starving to death.
That I agree with.
They're losing an entire generation. Of course, they will lose an entire generation, but they have nothing to lose, nothing at all to lose. And as you know, you specifically said, just like we predicted the current market collapse, economic collapse, our data, and we stand by it.
Well, you're predicting a hell of a lot more than that. Ed, hold on. We've got a lot to talk about, obviously, and I've got a lot to fit in here. We'll be right back. Ed Dames, Major, was now SciTech, a civilian, was in the military remote viewing program for 20 years. So in the middle of everything else, we're talking to Ed about what he sees coming. And that is not to suggest what he sees is as prophecy or as prophet, but what he sees. What's the best way to say this anyway, Ed? When I say you see it coming, you literally, in the literal sense, see it coming, as opposed to having prophetic insights.
That's close enough. For those people who are familiar with technical remote viewing, they know what we do, and seeing is only one small part of how we describe events. We process ideas in a very structured, rigorous way. Of course, we teach the public how to do this, and many, many people are doing this now for themselves. And perceiving ideas and then objectifying those ideas as words and sketches, that's a good description, a short description of what we do. It's like going to a library.
Okay, Ed. You know, we did cover, you admitted to one thing you've been wrong on in the past, and maybe wrong on the timeline for this shot across the bow with the sun, even though there's, as we discussed, a lot of activity. Now, is there some possibility that about this bond default, about this financial meltdown that goes way beyond what we even saw yesterday on Wall Street, I mean way beyond, is how much chance is there you are wrong?
I don't think there's any chance that we're wrong based on other events that we'll talk about. It is not just the financial markets that are collapsing here, Art. It's their underpinning. This is a house of cards right now.
Okay. Normally, when something like this happens, a horrid day on Wall Street, the President of the United States steps forward quickly and says, the basic structure of our economy is sound. There's no reason for panic. There's no reason for anybody to get out of joint over all of this. It's a temporary dip. The basic economy underneath all is still sound. That's what a president would say if he was in his country. It's what Robert Rubin said yesterday. Now, what do you have to say about that? Is our basic economy sound?
Right now, it is.
It is.
Right now, our economy is sound.
So Robert Rubin was telling the truth, or if the president was here doing what I consider to be his job, he would be telling the truth, as of now.
That's correct.
What is going to change that is going to make our basic economy unsound?
Well, because of the interconnectedness with all of these other markets, we are going to be floating alone. We are the last domino to fall. The U.S. economy, the Europeans are the penultimate domino, the Western Europe. But all of these factors that you're seeing out there, the ecological and the geopolitical situations are going to cause this thing to break apart. We've overextended ourselves for so many years. And I'm preaching to the choir here now. Economists know this. Most Americans know this. Most Americans, like you and I, have lived on personal credit for most of the last decade. Well, many Americans.
That's correct.
And they're overextended as individuals.
That's for sure.
Just extend that idea to our country, and you'll see where we're at. When the markets collapse or when we devalue currencies, money evaporates immediately. Watch what happens in the next few months as jobs begin to evaporate. That's what I mean. This is going to be brought home very quickly. I am not an economist, but I am a good remote viewer. And telling you what's coming is that, well, I told you what was coming 2 years ago, and it's here now. The way it pans out is it's going to go from grim to gruesome.
Okay. I hear you. What did you say 2 years ago that is here today?
A global economic collapse. That is what I said 2 years ago. In the late spring or summer of 1998.
You're quite correct. You sure did. And you say...
A laughable thing then. It was laughable up until 3 months ago because the U.S. economy was so strong And then all of a sudden, something happened in Japan, and you know, which was had precedence in the and other countries in Asia. And now nobody's laughing, and I know I have the attention of most of your listeners now.
Sure as hell have my attention. Can you tell us how this is going to unwind? In other words, how many details do you have?
I have a number of details, and they're all grim.
Well, lay it on us.
Well, actually, the biggest one of the biggest, there's a confluence of events here. The weather, believe it or not, and the sun is connected here. We'll have to finish talking about the sun in a moment.
Yeah.
What's happening with the sun. Very interesting.
Yes, that, in fact, if that comes true, it really makes all other events, including a complete financial meltdown, somewhat academic, doesn't it?
It does. Mood. It eclipses all other things, no pun intended.
Even nuclear conflict.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. But right now, it's the weather. Because, first of all, you know, we talked about the weather a lot. What's over the horizon? A couple of years ago, we were talking about the damage that weather would do, how I mentioned that in the future we would not be able to grow crops, food crops, the way that we have been so accustomed to doing,
right.
That is exposed to the vicissitudes of the weather.
You know, Ed, I've got to stop you and say to you, I've interviewed some American natives who said that this year they had to completely trash their crops and start all over again because their crops, this was the Hopi elders, were burned, literally burned. And here in Nevada, my wife prides herself on growing artichokes, Ed, and we planted artichokes. And the damnedest thing happened. They got burned. They were literally burned, and something killed the early crop. Now, we've got a second crop that's trying to come back, but the same thing that Hopi elders observed about their mass crops occurred here in my little tiny ecological
niche.
Wife-tended niche. And what the hell happened?
I think I know this what happened. About 2 days ago, something struck me. I've been watching the sun, all the measurements for our instruments.
X-rays. We were going to talk about X-rays.
You know, when there's a solar flare, there's a big spike in the X-ray flux as measured by our instruments, both ground-based and space-based.
You bet.
Okay. But there's something very interesting that is happening in the last week. The X-ray flux has been creeping upward. That is the steady stream of X-rays that the sun is emitting.
That's right.
It's been creeping upward. It's very high right now. It continues this. It will creep up into the magnitude of X-rays that a solar flare produces as a spike. So in essence, what is happening is we're slow cooking. Instead of just getting a burst of energy, the Earth getting hit with a burst of energy, it looks like we may be parboiled. We may be slow cooked. But this X-ray flux is creeping up to the point that a solar flare maintains just momentarily, 5 to 10 minutes, maybe a little bit longer. But all of a sudden now, it's being maintained at that same level, possibly. That's what appears to be happening.
Huh.
That's not good.
Two interesting, possibly unrelated things. One, I had a technical facts from a fellow who's got solar panels, I don't know, it's about a week ago. And he monitors the current and voltage draw from those solar panels. He's got meters on each. He said that the current levels from those solar panels have been going up precipitously with no explanation. And he's monitored these damn things for 10 years. That I thought was weird. Then I had people saying, you know, even here in Canada, I'm out for a little while during the day and I'm getting sunburned. Something's different. Then I had a fax from somebody else who said, you know, Art, I went out today and I did something I shouldn't have done. I looked at the sun and I didn't see any yellow components, that it was very white. And so I walked outside and I squinched my hand together so I could just, you know, I just get a tiny view of the sun, which was stupid. It's not the way to do it. And I'll be damned, it looked pure white to me. I called my boss at the network up in Oregon. I said, do me a favor, do the test. You know, you can make a little hole in a box and project the sun onto something and take a look at it for me. And he did, and he said, damn, it's all white. Now, this could just be psychological suggestion, you know, subconscious suggestion by my saying it. But I've had a lot of very odd observations about the sun. And by God, we are having X-class flare after X-class flare.
Well, Art, you remember a couple of programs ago that we did together, I mentioned that bees were being blinded.
Yes, I
do. The ozone layers are thinning.
Yes, sir.
And the bees, they are actually being blinded. They can't evolve fast enough generation to generation to keep up with the intensity of the sunlight. And so they cannot see to find their food, and they're starving to death in many regions. And so that's correct. We are being baked.
We're being baked.
We're being baked. And the weather problems are now as severe as I described the way in which the weather would change to preclude growing crops the way we have been used to. That was 2 years ago. That's here now. That will result in millions of people in 1999 dying of starvation. Millions. Not hundreds of thousands, but millions.
Millions.
But what will aggravate that very, very quickly are plant diseases, especially light, especially fungi. That is going to be the thing that really aggravates the food problem. Right now, the world's sorghum crop is in an emergency situation. And I don't know if you're aware of it.
You've been saying this for years about the fungi.
Yeah, there's an emergency situation with sorghum. Well, and corn is really endangered in several parts of the world now, too, with its own blight. What happens when that's followed by wheat and rice and oats?
Mass starvation is
that's
what
correct.
Would occur.
That's correct. So it's as if the earth is striking back. It's mounting a counterattack against overpopulation by its key cancer agent.
Just key cancer agent.
The earth is overpopulated.
Yeah, I don't reject that at all, either, you know, aside from being able to remote view it. Anybody with an ecological head on their shoulders can see what's going on.
What I wanted to say was this. Years ago, when we were able to discern this economic collapse, we were also looking at something that followed right on the heels of the collapse, and that was not the Korea nuke. It wasn't even the plant pathogens. It was human diseases. We think here in SciTech, based upon our remote viewing data, that human diseases, the epidemics, will spread so rapidly, they'll mirror what's now happening in many ways, analogically, they'll mirror what's happening in the stock market. They'll spread so fast. They'll go through human populations like wildfire, and that is about to happen, Art.
Oh, my God. Ed, when did you begin to close in on this information you're giving me right now?
2 years ago. Not the Korean nuke. That was only 10 months ago.
When did you begin to become so sure that you wanted to go on the air and talk about it?
About a year ago. And I did. It's sort of a cleansing. This solar thing, though, again renders all of the other human problems problematic. It is the grand cleanser, and that's what we had called 2 years ago when we first did your show. We called this discontinuity, the thing that we did not understand.
Couldn't see past. There was an event you could not see past that you called the discontinuity.
Correct.
For lack of a better term.
And it took us a year to work that out to determine that it was indeed the sun, our own star.
This is the discontinuity. Now, you were incorrect about the timeline of the shot over the bow that you predicted regarding the sun, which should have been late spring. It is now September. So you say you are not wrong, though, about what you call the kill shot. Now, will there be a precursor event still to this kill shot, or is it just going to happen?
I don't know if the precursor event is what I just described in terms of X-rays, or if it is a very large coronal mass ejection, a very large flare. I do not know that. It's too complex for us to work out. We've reached our limits using this tool and what we can do. We tried to attack the problem anyways. It's just too complex for us.
Is it true, Ed, that the toughest aspect of remote viewing is the nailing down of timelines, not that events are going to occur, but when they're going to occur?
That's correct.
So we
happen. The only reason that we got the current economic situation correct was we spent so much time on it over and over again, working it to be able to nail it down. It takes a tremendous amount of work to fix an event in time, both past and present.
Yeah.
If you have no other information to bracket the event in terms of a window of time, linear time, because mind is outside of time. And it's that arena in which technical remote viewing works. Mind, the fifth dimension, attempting to look down on the fourth dimension, which is time.
Right. This is really interesting. Now, let me take you off into a slightly more esoteric, hopefully ever so slightly encouraging area. I have performed several experiments using literally millions of people, my audience. They have been seemingly successful in either having craft showing themselves or three separate weather experiments that we played with. And I guess what I'm asking is, if a large segment, millions of people, were to use what mental power they have toward changing the events you're describing now, could such an intervention in any way change what is going to occur?
Based upon my experience, I don't know. Based upon my intuition, which I never use, I think yes, but I think it would take a very large amount of people, yeah. Yes, I think the answer to your question is yes. Yeah.
Which is to suggest then that events are not absolutely fixed in time, and that large numbers of minds working on a modification of an event still to occur might have an effect on that. I mean, it's like a shot in the dark here, but I'm grasping at anything based on what you're saying.
I think that if the event is very large, then you would need an extraordinary number of minds to do that, to achieve that kind of coherency. That would be a good word to use, and an impact.
It would be a mass remote influencing experiment. I guess that's the way you put it.
Probably close enough in terms of descriptive terms, yes. But I don't think humankind is that close yet. I mean, remember the old days that when we talked, you saw advertisements about the Maharishi effect, where if 100,000 or 144,000 people got together and
yes,
that kind of thing. I think that there is something to that, obviously. I think you would agree. But are we going to do it? No. We can't get our act together as humans.
All right.
We're not united enough to do that.
Yeah, we're probably not. All right, Ed, hold it right there. Ed Dames is my guest, Major Ed Dames. SciTex, Ed Dames. I'm Art Bell. We'll be right back.
Her hair is hollow gold, lips sweet surprise. Her hands are never cold. She's got Betty Davis eyes. She turned her music on you. You won't have to think twice. She's pure as New York snow.
You know, if you've got kids in the room, as I warned you earlier, and I'll warn you again, or you are upset by this kind of discussion, then do yourself a favor and turn your radio off. Okay? With that qualification made, back to Ed Dames. Ed, I'm warning everybody, and maybe over-warning them on purpose this morning. because I, you know, this is pretty seriously bad news you're giving us.
I'm painfully aware of that. I know that people are scared, and as a matter of fact, that was sort of the doom review, and that's what we have on our palette in terms of what we did to outline what's coming so that people can be prepared or shrug it off, you know, up to individuals. I am hanging up the Dr. Doom hat. I mentioned that on the last show. We've got two other projects that have nothing to do with these kinds of outlooks at all. And I am not going to get involved in them anymore.
But how do you ignore, Ed, no matter what project you may be on to now, how do you ignore your own knowledge of what's coming in terms of making any project you might have academic?
It's just a matter of choice. There's only two big projects that we have.
Starman, I know about.
Starman is there. That's our biggest and our most important. But, you know, we've gone on to locate Amelia Earhart's Lockheed Electra wreckage.
Oh, yeah, tell everybody about that. This is so much lighter.
It is.
Have located the wreckage.
We've located the wreckage. Well, actually, we've got the wreckage within a 2-kilometer circle in Micronesia. And I could say a number of things about that. I'll have a national press release. But before SciTech has this press release, we'll let your listeners know where this location is.
What are your plans? Are you SciTech Ed Dames and your vice president going to the actual location where this wreckage is, or how are you going to handle it?
Let me give you some background first. We chose this project because it was not doom and gloom.
Right.
It was something that's fun.
Right.
And we think it might be the last fun project we'll get to do before things come apart at the seams globally. And I hope we're not overcome by events before we bring this to completion. The other reason we're doing it is because it's ground truth. When it's been 61 years since Amelia Earhart has crashed, 1937, disappeared, America's favorite missing person, and no other agency or person has been able to find the wreckage.
I've seen documentaries that suggest that she was on a spy mission, that she was shot down.
Oh, it goes on and on. There's an abundance of conspiracy theories.
Oh, yeah,
abundance
you
of
betcha.
All, but in fact, no one knows what really happened, but we do. And we're going to...
So you not only know where the wreckage is, you know why she came out of the sky.
For many years, I had the impression, for one reason or another, I guess it's because so many people talked about it, that she had crashed, landed somewhere, and became stranded on an island or an atoll.
Right.
But in fact, it looks like she died in the wreck. Not in the wreck, but I'll say for the first time now that we have the wreckage in the water. It is not on land.
Oh, no kidding.
Mm-hmm. And in fact,
that makes sense, actually. I mean, if she went down, the odds of managing to get down in an emergency on land as you're crossing the Pacific, particularly that area, are slim and none of hitting land.
There was a storm. She got caught in bad weather. There's much more to this, but I'll try to make it short.
I don't want you to give anything away here. You shouldn't.
No, I won't. Not until the proper time, of course. And I'll tell you what the proper time will be in a moment. There was a storm. And she did survive. She tried to beach her aircraft at a certain point on land. Won't mention which land. It's in Micronesia, big area. And she survived the crash.
Right.
The ditching, but she drowned. That was interesting as far as I was concerned, because for many years, I thought that her remains we finished up the wreckage portion of the project so rapidly that we had additional resources left to look for her remains. And
all
that's
right.
When we discovered that she drowned very close to her aircraft.
All right. Do you believe that her wreckage can be found today?
Oh, absolutely. That's what we're going out to do.
It was a relatively light plane, wasn't it?
No, it was not. It was a Lockheed Electra 10E, two-engine of his large aircraft, for those days, it was not a light plane.
Okay. So if it hit the ocean floor, it would likely more or less stay where it went down?
The engine would, but not the rest of the air. It depends. If for instance, she had crashed at sea, deep sea, open ocean, then the entire aircraft, of course, when it sank, would go down intact. They're in very deep water and would remain intact. But in fact, she crashed near an atoll and very close to the atoll.
So it's not as deep as you might imagine. It's not Howard Hughes-type submersible craft deep.
Well, it looks like the heavier, the front end, the engines, at least one engine, and part of the nose of the aircraft is still hung up on the reef. But because of hurricanes and tsunamis over the years, we think that parts of the aircraft have fallen off over this particular reef into the deep. Now, there's technology available once we pinpoint the wreckage like we've done, to without any problem, no matter how deep the wreckage is, to photograph it and to retrieve it. It isn't a problem like it used to be decades ago. But in this case, we know that at least the engine is probably in about no deeper than 60 feet of water. So in late October, November, I and my chief operating officer and perhaps one or two others will be pull a reconnaissance mission. Purpose of that mission is to take our technical remote viewing data, our sketches and our data, to go to the site. This is what we used to do in the military, so it's the same old thing. Whether it was a war in Libya with an aircraft down in the water, or the civilianization of technical remote viewing, going up to Familiar Heart.
Right.
We go there, we do some diving, we get some photography. We're going to try not to touch the wreckage, because aircraft historians and archaeologists can derive a great deal of data by the orientation of the wreckage, and things that will eliminate us from having to remote view every aspect of the crash itself. They can put the crash together by looking at the orientation of the wreckage. So we'll get the photography, and then the next mission there will be a retrieval or a salvage mission.
That's going to cost you or somebody a lot of money.
Well, we don't invest our money in the stock market. So we have to do something with it all, and it goes to Project Starman and Amelia Earhart. That's what SciTech does with its money.
Ed, hold on a moment. Are you willing to take a few calls from the audience?
I am.
You are. All right. Hold on then. We're going to get to some of you in the audience for Ed Dames here in a moment. All right, here we go. Let's go back now to Ed Dames. I just want to intersperse a few calls, if I can, Ed, to keep the audience as part of this. I'm sure they have a lot of questions this morning. A lot of Americans are really nervous right now, Ed, and can you blame them?
No.
First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames and Art Bell. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Hi. I'm Gwen.
Gwen?
Calling from Atlanta.
Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Gwen.
First time caller.
Glad to have you.
But I've been listening to you for some time now, and you keep me up all night.
Thanks.
I want to know if the bond market and everything is going to crash.
Well, he covered that, and it's such a terrible, dire prediction that I will let him...
What I want to know is this going to affect the banks and insurance companies and all that kind of stuff also?
All right. A very good question, actually. The answer on the bonds is that Ed said earlier. You go ahead and say it, Ed.
Well, essentially, yes. America will end up defaulting on interest payments on the bonds and then paying back the bonds themselves.
Which essentially, when you understand what the bonds are, would mean the end of the U.S. government as we know it, which you then said is correct.
Yes, we will not be able to pay our rent anymore.
All right. Now, she asked about the banks and other financial institutions. It's a good question.
I'm not certain, Art. I'm not an economist. So I don't know how that. I have no remote viewing data other than what I've talked to you about in a general sense. So I don't know the particulars of how all these chain reactions would work.
Well, okay. Do you have any remote viewing data with regard to, of course, we had a horrid day on Wall Street yesterday, horrid. To where it goes from here, is there a brief revival? Does it then take a downturn, or can we look for some up days, or what's ahead? Do you know that?
No. The only thing that we've got some evidence about is possibly some military action in Eastern Europe that really has a first effect, another negative effect on the market.
Could
but
that,
these are just points along the line, and you know we go after the big picture.
I know.
We can look at any specific thing, as you know.
Now you've said the president you have seen will not finish his term. You've been saying that for a long time.
Correct.
As a matter of fact, I've had some prophets on the show that have said that as well. Been kind of a chorus. Is there anything you can tell us about where it goes politically if this president does not finish his term?
No, I don't have any elaborating information along those lines.
Okay, good enough. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Ed Dames and Art Bell.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, this is Mike, L.A.
Hi, Mike.
Just a theory, you guys can comment on it. If you hold your hand over an iron, you get a specific type of heat. If you put your hand over a light bulb, you get a different heat, a stinging heat. They're completely separate. My theory is that the type of heat we're getting is from ultraviolet rays getting below the 10-mile limit they usually go to, and all of this is coming from the thermosphere region, the F2 region, which is usually at 3,600 Fahrenheit. So I think that the ultraviolet is where we're getting this stinging type of heat rather than that iron type of dissipated heat. And you guys might want to check into that and have Hoagland check on my paper.
All right, thank you. It's interesting, Ed. I test products for Bob Crane, and I've got an ultraviolet meter, detector, whatever you want to call it. It gives you a UV reading. It's highly accurate. It's like a Geiger counter only for UV. And I'm starting to look now at the sun every day with it. Very, very interesting. I have nothing to say further on the subject at the moment, but I'm watching UV radiation levels personally because I don't trust anybody. But what he just said, anything to it?
I don't understand the dynamics and the physics behind what we're perceiving. We can look over the horizon at the effects. But it would take a solar physicist or a geophysicist to sit down with us, interrogate us as technical remote viewers, and then put the pieces together so that the expert could define what we're describing in a general way.
I understand.
That's what this is all about. We become experts at looking over the horizon and describing effects, but only if we're experts. Can we take those things and put them together in a technical sense?
Okay, that's an absolutely proper answer. Here's a fact, and I'm going to get to as many as I can. Art, regarding the government's default, would you please ask Ed what time frame this may occur in, and what events would precede the default? In other words, what events would we see to indicate that we're very close to that?
War.
War?
Yes.
At what kind of level? When you say war, you've told us, of course, about what will occur with Korea. Are you referring to that, or are you referring to a wider, bigger war?
I think both. Looks like possibly Korea and another front.
Another front.
Yes.
Can you give us any timeline on that? Timelines are the, again, folks.
No, actually, and we're not going to look anymore. We've had enough, and we are, you know, we're going to back out. We've already identified actions that we in the company are going to take based upon this knowledge. And I have recommended to all the people who have learned remote viewing to use this to discern where their families and if they as individuals should go and what to do, rather than trying to find the Lost Dutchman mine or something like that. The time is limited. So I'm not going to invest any more time in this. I think we can see that what you've described as the quickening is now accelerating.
Yes.
These events are on us, and it's time to hunker down and start taking care of ourselves. And
you know, though, Ed, I want to be really sure that we're not precipitating these events.
What do you mean by we?
Well, I wrote the quickening, Ed.
Uh-huh.
That's what I saw coming.
I think you're giving yourself too much power, Art, if you say that. That's just my take on it.
Okay. Or that things you would say or somebody who would say scare the hell out of people about a crash that's coming or even a default that's coming, precipitating panic, which, of course, is reflected rather immediately in the markets.
The crash is here. I mean, make no bones about it. This was only the event of 70 years ago was equal to what happened in this last week. So, for all intents and purposes, this is very close to a crash.
Well, you and I'll tell this audience one more time. You faxed me desperately on Thursday last, saying that you had to get on the air and warn people about a financial event or disaster that was immediately ahead. And, of course, I was sick Thursday and Friday, so you didn't get on the air. It didn't get said. But I'm telling the audience, it's the truth. Now, you wanted to say then what you have said tonight. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi. My name's Todd. I'm calling from Minneapolis.
Hi, Todd.
Yeah, I just turned off my radio. I got a couple comments and then a question for Mr. Dane.
Sure.
First, I've been listening to you since you first came on the air here in Twin Cities.
Been a long time now.
Yeah, it sure has. And to be honest, Art, I never bought into the conspiracy thing, but Mr. Dane's there just filled it for us. We have a civilian government, and he basically told us that the NSA has kept us from our, duly elected representative. And that really bugged the heck out of me. I had to get that off my chest.
Well, do you doubt it?
I have not doubted it. In fact, if I had evidence and whatever, I would pretty much say to senators, dismantle the NSA. I'm really that mad about it. To have them come on the air and then admit it before America. But now to my question. Mr. Dane, you said I think it was two sessions ago, that you use an incredible amount of vigor on this kill shot. And the same amount of vigor was used on the nuke in Korea.
That's
and
correct.
If the one did not come true, the second one, all bets were off.
That's correct.
Okay, so as far as I'm concerned, you're wrong about the kill shot.
The nuke comes first, Todd. If the nuke doesn't happen, then I would then disregard the information on the kill shot.
That's what he said. I remember.
Okay.
We haven't seen the nuke yet.
And the kill shot isn't here. And my final comment would be...
No, listen, caller.
Yes, sir.
I too keep track of this carefully. And the only thing that Ed was wrong about with regard to the sun, maybe, was the precursor event that was supposed to occur, he said, by late spring. And that would be followed... at a further time by a kill shot. That's what he said.
I appreciate the correction.
Yeah, I mean, that really is accurate, to be fair.
Yeah, thank you, sir. I guess that's pretty much all I have to say.
All right, I appreciate the call. Thank you. Okay, Ed, we're at a cross point here. I have more time available, but if you feel like you've said all you want to say, we can stop it here, or we can do more and take more calls. It's up to you.
Well, do you want me to qualify a little bit what I said about our commanders in chiefs and what they know and what they're not told?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely I do. So hang in there, hold it right there, and we'll come back to you. Do I believe that President Clinton was not told everything when he came into office? Oh, you're damn right, I believe that. Do I have a hard time believing that? No, not at all. The military-industrial establishment absolutely regarded President Clinton as a passing phase and not a friend. So do I believe they wouldn't tell him everything? Sure, I believe it. Is that a stretch? Not much of one. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. All right, I am going to read a letter of, is it criticism? I don't know, maybe. Challenge to me. And I'm going to think about it. Nancy, listening to KFRE 940, Fresno, says, Art, if you buy Ed's answer that we, collectively, aren't together enough as a race to effectively or to affect change, then you are part of the problem. We, collectively, can evolve, work together, and create change if we set our minds to it. And here she points out something that I should have pointed out. There have not been five experiments. There have been six. We collectively, I believe, saved Daniel Brinkley's life. I'd forgotten that one. That really makes it six. Anyway, she goes on. Danyan's miracle proves the power we, in quotes, have, as do the experiments you conducted on your show. You, Art Bell, have the power as a director to focus it, to take the plunge, or, on the other hand, to do nothing and wonder for all time if, in quotes, we could, would, should have done it. Nancy, I take this fact very seriously, Nancy, and I will think about it. I will think about it. Ed, she has a good point. You know, there's a couple of choices here. One is to try and do something. And one is to be observers, and to do nothing.
Art, the most powerful thing I know of is prayer. I've seen miracles. I've been around miracles that are awe-inspiring.
Right.
Based upon prayer.
Right.
So there's not a doubt in my mind, but what she is saying is true. But I'm also a realist, and that's all that I'm saying.
All right. Anyway, I'm going to file that one under the I'll sure think about it, Nancy, category. And put this one aside so I do think about it. Ed, you said that you would like to elaborate further on our president, William Jefferson Clinton, who was not, you have told us, told everything by the NSA that he should have been told constitutionally.
Well, there's nothing in the Constitution that says the president should be told everything, nor could the president ever know anything. The intelligence system is so complex, there is no way that one man, except at the head of something like that or in the higher ranks for more than 20 years, could begin to understand all of the different systems and the way they interoperate. So the Secretary of Defense is the one whose job it is to buffer that from the president. And sometimes we in the intelligence community in the past have spent a lot of time educating Secretaries of Defense, and sometimes they have breached security, compromised security, because it just took so long to educate them, they had forgotten some things. But generally speaking, they act as a go-between, a cutout necessarily, between the president and the intelligence agencies. But still, there's some politics involved. I think I'll tell you a story.
Sure, go ahead.
Bear with me. About this kind of thing. It's fairly contemporary. It's about, I'd say maybe 4 years old. This is a story, a four-year-old story. Do you remember Jennifer Harbury?
No.
Does that name ring any bells?
No.
This was a diminutive Harvard graduate, a lawyer, who married a very romantic Che Guevara type of Guatemalan general.
Okay.
She made the she was on the front page of People magazine, Newsweek, a number of others, because she had alleged that the CIA killed her husband.
Oh, yes, okay. All the bells just went off now. I know exactly who she is, yes.
And she set out on the plaza in front of the government building in Guatemala City.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, 60 Minutes covered it, Ed.
Yes, they did.
Okay, I know exactly the case, yes.
And the Guatemalan military really wanted to kill her, but they couldn't because they were afraid that aid would be cut off in the U.S.
Obviously, yeah.
Well, one day, about 4 years ago, after she had visited President Clinton, she set out across from the White House and was invited in to see the president. President Clinton invited her in. He said he would try to help find out what really happened to her. I won't go into all the details, but what really happened to her husband. He would go to the intelligence agencies and try to get the answer. She said he thought U.S. intelligence had the real answer about where her husband was buried. Well, just prior to her second visit, invited visit to President Clinton, she sat down with an agent of the U.S. government in a restaurant in Washington, D.C. And that agent told her, you realize why, first of all, the agent said, you need to realize why your husband was killed in the first place. Because U.S. policy, state policy, said that at that time, at that juncture in history, he, as a rebel leader, was an enemy of the Guatemalan military, and the Guatemalan military was an ally of the United States, and therefore we assisting the Guatemalan military, helped kill her husband. So there was no doubt in her mind about the politics. But she still wondered where her husband was buried, where
sure.
his remains were.
Of course.
And so this agent said to her, okay, this is what you need to do. President Clinton will never be able to get the information that he needs because he doesn't know where to get it and he doesn't know what questions to ask. Presidents don't know this. There's too much. They're involved in too many other things at the helm of the government. And so this agent took a napkin and wrote down some things, some instructions, passed that over to Ms. Harbury and said, tomorrow, when you see President Clinton, tell him to do this, to go to this person, and to ask for this, and you will find out what happened to your husband. That agent was me. I had to educate the president of the United States.
That agent was you?
That's correct. Because presidents don't know the system. It takes somebody inside the system to know the system, and it takes somebody inside the system to change the system. That's the only way you can do it.
Oh, boy. This is one you've never told me before.
No, there's a lot I haven't told you. The mystique of intelligence.
Yeah, I guess so. There is a lot that you haven't told me. In other words, there's a lot more that you haven't told me, isn't there? Intelligence work that you've done and things that you know that you can't talk about.
That's right. Or I would end up where the alleged Richard Holguin informant would be if that informant had really done that.
Uh-huh. You're not an economist. I just got the Asia closed. Every single Asian country in the entire Pacific is down except Japan, and the Nikkei is up 261 points, or 1.86%. Every other Asian country, period, is down. I could list them my womb. Would you imagine there was intervention on the part of the Japanese government?
Yes. I think there was. Mm-hmm.
That's
just like there will be here.
Yeah, I would have to guess that, too.
Do
you think there'll be intervention in U.S. Stock markets today?
I don't know, Art. I don't know. Eventually it will be. There will have to be a tactic of desperation. But
it's so damn big, you know. Our market is so damn big that if there's really a down move, to turn that around would be real expensive.
Well, we'll have to do something, you know, but it'll be stopgap. This country, we've all led the good life for a long time.
I know that.
And the only epidemic here is obesity. Many other countries, it's a horrible existence, Art.
You are correct.
We're lucky. We're very fortunate. We should count our blessings now, and we should be very lucky that we've had this kind of good life.
And remember these as the good old days, huh?
Yes, I think so.
All right. You have, let's see, it was about, God, has it been a year ago now, Ed, that you churned out tapes, remote viewing tapes, that were designed to let everybody who wanted to do what you do. And you turned out a series of videotapes in modules 1, 2, and 3 to virtually be able to do what you do, remote view.
Which is a skill, a very amazing skill.
I sure don't deny that. It is an amazing skill. People can still get those tapes, I presume, if they want to, and look at the things that you are now talking about. Is that correct?
That's what we do. That's what SciTech does. It sells those tapes to the public, and we, on the internet, we teach the, we answer questions and we hold classrooms on the internet. The tapes teach people to do what we do.
I bet you pissed a lot of people off, because 2 years ago when I began interviewing you and the other remote viewers from the military program, many of them, as you well know, learned remote viewing to some degree or another and then struck out on their own. In fact, even your courses, though they were booked up and you couldn't get into them, were thousands of dollars. What was a typical remote viewing go down and learn it course in person? How much? $4,000 or $5,000, something like that?
My course, and we taught mostly doctors and scientists at first, was $4,500 a pop for 9 days of a very intense instruction.
And so now, so then all of a sudden, boom, here you are with videotapes, just probably destroying the market, in essence, yours and other people's, in teaching them how to remote view. How's that going?
We're the only game in town, and we have about 10,000 students now, and it's going quite well. And the reason it is because we're the only people that call ourselves remote viewers that can actually remote view, that can actually get the job done, and that's why people are attracted to us.
All right, so if the listener now wants to learn to remote view and wants the tapes, they should begin with Module 1, or they can just take the plunge and get all the modules at once, I guess, at this point, because they're all out now, right?
Yes, they're all out. In fact, there's another one. There's not a teaching module, but the company has produced a tape called The Impossible Challenge, which is a video background of SciTech's history. And that was also produced. That was directed by William Gusecki, the Oscar nominee guy who did Waco.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of news reports on SciTech documenting things that you have done. In fact, what was the one that I watched, Ed, recently, that the reporter who covered it was totally mind blown?
She was astounded.
She was astounded, is correct. You want to just relate a little bit of that? Because I remember seeing it myself.
That's a video clip that's on our website. We have all of our news, the videos on our website. And that was a reporter had chosen a blind target for our vice president. I pulled our vice president, Joni Dirk, into a room and said, sit down, I need for you to do something. There's a reporter coming here. And the reporter, all we do as remote viewers is give our students a set of two four-digit numbers. Unconscious is trained.
Right.
Students' personal unconscious is trained to do all the work. So this reporter decided to attempt to have Joni, a professional remote viewer, identify the cause of a Los Angeles Fire Department helicopter crash. And she did that, which was quite astounding.
She
in one session, and the reporter was quite blown away.
I actually saw it as it happened. Now, this was professional television coverage, And the reporter obviously came in more or less as a debunker.
At least as a skeptic, yes.
A skeptic, all set to trip you guys up big time.
Of course, it happens to us all the time, and we could care less.
She walked away shaking her head going, I'll be damned.
Yeah, we take all takers. We're professionals, aren't we? This is what we do. It's an amazing skill. I understand why people are blown away. It's not that I have fallen into an ennui or have been very cloyed. It's just that we have professionalized this skill. We're the center for the professionalization of technical remote viewing worldwide. This is what we do.
Okay, well, the TRV tapes, Module 1 is very moderately priced. And then it gets more expensive to get Module 2, I think, and so forth.
Module 2 is a four-tape set.
Four-tape set. Module 1 is how much?
Module 1 is $49.95.
So you can begin there and decide if you want to go to Module 2.
Correct. And then it gets very complex after that. All the very technical skills are there. It would be the difference, I think, allegorically, between a solo pilot's license and instrument rating. Between Module 1 and Module 2.
All right, I've got you. The number, then, for people to call is 1-888-878-0333. Tell me if I'm wrong.
That's correct. Thanks.
That is the number?
That is.
All right, folks, if you want these tapes, if you want to learn to remote view yourself, it's 1-888-878-0333. I presume that's a good 24-hour day number. Ed Dames, Major Ed Dames, SciTech's Ed Dames is here tonight, living up to his reputation as Dr. Doom. Whether the hat's up on the rack or not, forevermore, I'm sure he'll be known that way. I'm Art Bell. We'll be right back. Okay, it's back to Ed Dames now. And Ed, are you there?
Yes, I'd like to mention that the UPN news piece that you saw, that's up in its entirety on our website, as well as previews of all the modules that we have, so people can see what they're getting into. In fact, I think that Keith Rowland really has some competition in terms of Patrick Duda, our own webmaster for best webmaster on the world.
Doing a pretty good job, huh?
Yep.
Good. A person needs a good webmaster these days. Everything is internet. You can't watch any commercial without seeing a web address.
Mm-hmm.
And the world is turning to the web. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. All right. Listen, I've got something that I want to set up, and you can respond to this or say that you don't wish to respond to it. And I'm not going to read it now because I just don't believe in this kind of thing. You know Joe McMonagle?
Yes, I do.
He's making some charges with respect to you. And I wonder if you feel it would be useful to confront him directly with these things that he's saying. And if you wish, I have a statement from him and I can read it, but I would prefer not to do that, but rather to get him on the air with you at some point, if you would prefer to handle it that way, or perhaps you don't prefer to, you'd rather not respond in any way at all.
I have no problem with going toe-to-toe with anyone like that. I'm just wondering what the utility of it would be. But I'll leave it up to you. I'd be glad to do that.
If you want to do it, I'll contact Joe McMonagle. And I don't like sitting here and reading somebody's statement about somebody else on the air. That's, in my opinion, dirty pool. If we're going to go at it, then I favor talking. When I have something to say to somebody, Ed, I like to say it to their face.
Yeah,
and as far as I'm concerned, if Joe has something to say about you, it's fine, and he should say it to your face. Or otherwise, you know, right here on the air, where you can each refute point by point and say what you want to say. so you're not misquoted.
Just so your audience knows, that Joe was a natural psychic that the unit used. I employed him for intelligence operations before the advent of coordinate remote viewing, which was the predecessor to technical remote viewing. And Joe did not believe that remote viewing could be trained. I think he changed his tune about 2 years ago when he saw that it could be trained.
All right. Well, all right, let's leave it there then, all right? And I will contact Joe, and if he would like to come on and at least in part have a conversation with you on the air and bring this up, then that's the way we'll do it. How's that?
That's fine.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Yeah, hi, this is John. Sitting here in Houston looking at the Weather Channel.
Hi, John.
Hey. Question for Ed Dames. This is where I see all this going with this Y2K thing and our money more or less going out the window. If you agree with this or not. The computers may be going down and money going out the window. You see this as giving this so-called New World Order an opportunity to more or less take control.
Yeah, that's a really, really good question, and let's take it a piece at a time. First of all, Ed, I've been interviewing substantial people in the know about the Y2K thing, and it's very, very serious, no matter, it seems, who you listen to. Do you have any remote viewing information that says anything at all about this computer, gigantic computer crash coming?
No, we don't, and I think in-house, it's generally agreed that we're not going to make it to Y2K, that Y2K will be preempted by other events,
academic.
Yes.
Huh. Well, that answers it all. I mean, there's no point going on really beyond that, I guess. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi. Is this me?
Only you know that for certain, but it sounds like you.
It's nice talking to you, Mr. Bell.
Where are you?
I'm from Tucson, Arizona.
Welcome.
My question is, earlier in the program, Mr. Dan said that there would be a war. My question is, has he remote viewed the situations in the Middle East and how we've really upset a lot of fundamentalist terrorists in the last couple of weeks? Has he got anything to say about the coming war in the Middle East?
No, I don't have any specific information about that.
Okay, well.
Sir, answer straight out. In other words, you see a war, and I pressed you a little, and you said Eastern Europe. Now, that covers a lot of bases.
Actually, we think that war is going to be so widespread and but sporadic right now. Two-thirds of the African continent are at war. But because the African got two-thirds, is economically unimportant to the developed countries, us being one, we don't notice it.
Well, you're right.
The Hutus and the Tutsis can kill each other, and that's of no consequence to us because they are not economically important to us. Now, I use us generally.
Civil war going on in the Congo, and it hardly even makes the news.
That's right. No, I mean, 10,000 people can die in one day, and it'll be a little corner spot somewhere on
that's true.
Second page of a paper.
Absolutely true.
But that's going to change when those wars start popping up in other areas. And you know, SciTech can actually take a look at where the next conflagrations will occur. But we've stopped doing that because there will be too many. And what's the sense?
It actually gets down to the point where what you see, you're so fed up with looking at the downside of things, or seeing the downside of things, that you've stopped looking at them.
It's not set up as much as acceptance. It's just here. These things are upon us now. What you have termed the quickening has accelerated to the point where we're in it. We're in the thick of things. We're just about to walk into the quick of things. So what, you know, here we are. Let's bear witness and go about our do whatever we can do. Hunker down. There's a lot of personal choices to be made here.
Boy, isn't that the truth. All right, first time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, sir, you're on the air.
Yes, I had a, I believe Ed had said in previous programs that gold would be going to $2,000 an ounce.
I believe that is correct. In fact, gold, of course, is languishing, although it's up like $5 or $6 over the last few days of terror in the markets.
It's actually going down, surprisingly.
Well, it went down. It's been up the last few days, but it's still languishing around in the 270s or 80s at the most.
Right. My question was if you can see a time frame on this.
Ed?
We haven't looked at a time frame. I think after the Russians dump all the gold and the platinum they have and turn to develop some more liquidity and they have no more gold left to dump, then you'll see gold start going up when the Russians unload all.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, caller, I've been hearing that the price of gold has been kept down because of fears that Russia will dump gold, fears that China will dump gold. Have you heard that?
Yes.
Yeah. So, so again, timelines, Ed, I guess, are the most difficult of all, huh?
Well, also interest on our part. We pick and choose these projects based upon our own criteria in-house, and that's just not something we've chosen to focus on. That particular thing.
I've got a New York Times piece of breaking news here. Associated Press, see what you make of this, Ed. Unfazed by Parliament's overwhelming rejection of his candidate for Prime Minister, Boris Yeltsin, holy mackerel, is resubmitting the name Viktor Chernomyrdin for parliamentary consideration. Chernomyrdin, meanwhile, said today he would present Yeltsin with a list of people he hoped to serve in his cabinet. Leaders of the lower house of Parliament, the State Duma, the Communists, said they would come up with a list of their own candidates for Prime Minister. No doubt on that list will be the name Alexander Lebed. After voting 253-94 on Monday to reject Chernomyrdin. So, what do you see happening in Russia? Do you have any insight by remote viewing at all as to where the situation in Russia is going?
No, not via remote viewing. Just very concerned about those 2,300 nuclear warheads.
Me too. Me too. All right.
I've painted some bleak scenarios for you in the past. I don't want to revisit those.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames and Art Bell. Hi.
Cool. My boyfriend hit me two years ago to you, and I'm glad you're feeling better, Art.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, my God.
Where are you?
I'm Dan from Sacramento, California.
Okay, do you have a question?
Oh, man. I'm going to try to say things quick. I have one question in particular. To mass prayer, we need to spread the word through Oprah or Rosie O'Donnell show. You know, if they want to get mass prayer, and I totally agree with Major Ed Dames because it's realistic to think that, yeah, it's hard to get everyone to want to do that. But if we spread the word to these mass media, you know, if we want to do it, we'll find out a way.
Well, maybe we could start it. I've had, again, Ed, I have had now, and I rethought this on the basis of the facts a young lady sent me, 6 mass experiments, not on a world event-changing level, but significant experiments with mass minds working. 6 experiments, and I am not foolish enough to think that I did anything other than act as a little bit of a band director and cheerleader to get people at a single moment to try something. Now, whether you could gather enough people together to really affect some of the hardest things that you see coming is something that I'm struggling with, and I don't.
But there's so many things. That's the problem. I applaud you for your efforts. I think you're on to something big. You're on to something important. But there's so many things out there. I've seen prayer work. I've seen it work. I've helped facilitate some amazing. So that be a band director like you did, and I know it works.
But I've only seen it in small miracles, never the big ones. That's not to say that, of course, one can't extend the idea to the big ones. I'm sure it's possible. But being a practical man, I'm not very optimistic.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I know.
That's probably a bad attitude. I agree.
Here's people asking all kinds of questions. You never did anything on L. Ron Hubbard, did you?
No,
okay. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Hi. First of all, Art, I want to tell you that the things that you did with the mass populace, doing positive things,
yes,
and bringing I must be very adamant that nothing negative will ever happen on a spiritual level or physiological level when you do things from your heart to try to help others and do good things. I know that you're afraid of repercussions, negative repercussions. There will never be negative repercussions.
Well, I hear you saying that, but I think that it is proper to be somewhat afraid of or respectful of something that you don't understand.
I understand that, but I'm trying to tell you.
I hear you.
That when in your heart and whenever in everyone else's heart, when they're trying to do something good, the consciousness becomes one. There will never be negative repercussions for that.
All right. I hear you, sir. Thank you. Ed, would you care to comment on that? Let us, for the sake of the discussion, because I'm a believer now, Ed. I've seen it work 6 times, and I'm not that much of a believer in coincidence. So, you know, I think it's real, this power that we tried. But what he just said is that there's no way that there could be negative repercussions ever. Now, do you agree or disagree with that, with regard to the kind of experiments that... I'm curious what you have to say.
I'm wondering, for instance, in my work, I know that in attempting to use technical remote viewing to discern the cause and the treatments and cures of fatal problems, diseases,
sure,
that we oftentimes run across an individual who really caused the disease or the malady themselves. In other words, they wanted to check out.
Yeah.
That was a big surprise to me in the early days of remote viewing.
That's not a surprise to me.
Well, it was to me. I was quite naive.
I didn't
realize that this kind of dynamic existed.
Oh, no,
and
people...
so I wonder if I and you and all of your listeners were to pray for someone like that, because that's essentially what you're doing is directed prayer.
Yeah.
And we were in our hearts extremely dedicated towards curing an individual like that. I'm not sure if we're doing the right thing. Suppose it seems to me we're going counter to the will of another individual. I'm not sure of the dynamics here.
I'm not either.
I just don't know her.
I'm not either. It just, I've been deep in meditative thought about this, and there was a hurricane here recently, Bonnie. And people really enjoy me, use this, try it, do another experiment. I said no. I don't understand the dynamics of what we're doing well enough yet to know that trying something like that wouldn't turn out poorly. For example, and I gave an example, suppose we were able actually to move a hurricane out to sea when it should have come on land. Well,
I remember I was listening that night to you.
Yeah, okay. And uh-huh. And so what I said is, well, maybe we move it out to sea or stall it, and the damn thing builds into a Category 5 and then slams into land. So, you know, I'm just concerned about the possible negative ramifications. Then along comes this gentleman, nice fellow, who just called, rose-colored glasses. You can't go wrong, he says. I'm not so sure. Obviously, you're not so sure.
I think our minds are so fallible. I know that mine is. That I don't trust it, Art. I just don't trust it. I mean, I trust my heart to some degree, but these puny minds that we have, they make a whole lot of mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah. No. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Daines and Art Bell. Hello.
Let me turn my radio down real quick.
Yep, do that.
Hi. All right. This
yes.
is Paula from Hawaii.
Hi, Paula. How are the islands?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Really beautiful. the reason why I'm calling is because I faxed you last week about your concern about not knowing whether your experiments were good or not.
Here we go again.
Were they safe?
Yes.
But in the Western tradition of Hermetics, we do what we call as a tarot divination, and we do a certain tarot spread, and we ask the question, what will be the outcome if I do such and such and such?
Mm.
And that way you determine it, you know, from the divine above.
Yeah, well, how are you sure?
If you don't do a tarot divination, it's considered black magic.
How are you sure that you know where the answer is coming from? Is it coming from a divine place, or is it coming from your own mind? How do you know?
Because you do certain rituals to bring down...
Rituals?
Yeah, well, not like rituals. You do certain meditations, or whatever you want to call them, and to bring down the white light around you and fill yourself with God and all goodness. And then, you know, I mean, if you're thinking negatively, then it's not a good idea to do it. But if you're in a positive, loving, caring mood and you do it, then...
Okay, I know. I hear you. Thank you. I hear people saying that, Ed. As long as you're covered with a white light, they say nothing can go wrong. Well, I can't say from personal experience that I know that to be the case. Maybe it is. But I don't know it to be the case. And if you perform, she says, certain rituals, and if you hear from some divine source, I would never challenge her faith, or for that matter, even her rituals, but they're not mine, and so I don't know that to be true. Do you?
No, I don't.
I have
standards, personal anchor points that I trust and that I use, but they're a result to some degree of my own culture, upbringing, and I believe in them, but I'm not going to recommend them or shove them down the throat of someone in another religion. So
well, I have 1 hour left. You want it? You want to go to bed?
I can hang around, Art. If
you can hang around, then consider yourself hung.
Okay.
I don't need a lot of nights like this. I'm Art Bell. Coast to Coast AM resumes. All right, I want to cover a couple of faxes I've got here, not all very friendly. One is, just fine, it says, Art, what's the bit with lightning in a clear night sky? This past Wednesday night, Thursday morning, across the western Nebraska sky, myself and several other drivers witnessed and discussed this. Did it have something to do with the solar storm of last week? What this man is calling lightning in a clear sky, in a clear night sky, sir, that's not lightning. What you saw was, in fact, the aurora borealis coming very far south. As a matter of fact, it came south of you by quite a bit because of the solar storm. Yes, indeed, because of the sun's activities. So for that driver, yes, what you're calling lightning in the sky is from our sun. Ed, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, here's a pretty rough fact, so we'll see how you handle it, all right?
Okay.
All right, Ed Daines knows damn well that Hal Putoff, Ingo Swann, and Pat Price, all key players in the remote viewing program, were Scientologists, and that the military intelligence community were dogging L. Ron Hubbard for decades. Remote viewing came from Hubbard. discoveries, Hubbard's discoveries, and Dames knows it, underlined. Why did he lie or play dumb when you mentioned Hubbard? For instance, the term anchor points is only a Hubbard discovery, only, underlined. Any comment?
Bunk? All bunk.
All bunk?
Yeah, every single bit of that is bunk.
Okay.
And by the way, is anybody out there with a voice stress analyzer or any other type of lie machine? Put it on. I'll say it again. It's bunk. Total bunk.
Okay.
Every bit of it.
Okay. Fair enough. Now I'm going to expose myself. I had a cousin named Freddie Lenz, who was a multimillionaire, who died in Long Island under unusual circumstances. The police have officially ruled his death as a suicide. I ask you publicly on the air to look into it for me. Some weeks ago, months ago, a couple months ago, I guess, I don't know. And you did so. And I just got this fax. Art, on Ed's last appearance, he was going to remote view the death of your cousin and let you know whether it was an accident, suicide, or murder. Has he done so? Gene and Jim, St. Louis, Missouri. Gene and Jim, listening to KGRS, the answer is yes. He has done so and privately gave me the information. And Ed, go right ahead and tell them what you told me.
Everything?
Yeah.
Well, Frederick Lenz had a seizure the night that he died. The seizure caused him to gasp for air. He started choking, and he could not breathe. And he bolted for the door to get some fresh air. And that's when he had the accident, falling into the water. He was conditioned to have the seizure for two reasons. He had, the night that he had the seizure, he was not abusing any substances whatsoever. But he had in the past a history of substance abuse, which set him up for this evening that he died. In fact, there was a flashing light. We did not investigate whether it was a television screen or a large overhead new age type of light, but this flashing caused a seizure. It actually catalyzed the seizure.
Actually, flashing can cause epileptic fits, I believe, and
well,
they proved that in Japan.
In children, particularly. Yeah. After children reach a certain age, that generally stops, and the frequency of that kind of seizure goes way down, unless you have some damage, and the substance abuse can do that.
So you're saying with a background of substance abuse, he had a seizure, stumbled outside.
Trying to get his breath.
Trying to get his
breath. Now, when one has a seizure, there's different types of seizures. Generally speaking, you have about 30 seconds before you pass out. You're trying to get some air. You run outside, and then you pass out. He passed out and went over into the water.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he was not abusing substances that night.
That night.
But it was a seizure. There was no conspiracy, nothing else. It was a seizure.
Not suicide, though.
No, it was not suicide by any means. In fact, he was a very happy man. We have some background on him. We wanted to take a look at him, put this thing in context and perspective. And he was a fairly happy individual. He was not depressed. I mean, I don't know what drove him to this long-term habit. But at the time, in days prior to this accident, it does not appear that he was depressed at all. In fact, he was fairly elated and happy.
That is the take I had on my own cousin, that he was elated, happy, successful, all of those things. There were many rumors of substance abuse. No question about that.
We even, I think we identified the substance too, but there's no need to go into that.
Freddie had a big 60 Minutes piece done on him also. He was a very high-profile person, and so I think that even though he was my first cousin and best friend as a youngster, that since the question was on the air, the answer should have been on the air, too. So that's the answer. And I appreciate it, Ed. Back to the lines. First time caller on the line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
How you doing, Ed?
Hi.
Where are you, sir?
Who are you talking to?
Sir, we're talking to you.
I'm calling from Halifax, Nova Scotia.
Nova Scotia, all right.
Yeah, we're a small place.
That's fine. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I do. I handle the millennium problems here in Nova Scotia.
The what problems?
Millennium. The year 2000 problems?
Oh, the Y2K problems,
Y2K
yes.
Y2K problems?
Yes.
Okay, and I just come up from Santa Clara, California, and I'm handling for the government of Nova Scotia here.
Yes.
And we're trying to figure out whether their telecoms are going to work, like telephones.
Yes.
Where power's going to work.
Yes.
Okay, let me give you a scenario, okay?
Just give me a question if you have one.
I have a question.
Go ahead then.
Okay. When you wake up on January 1st, 2000.
Yes.
What's going to happen?
All right. The answer to that is that there will be an event before January 1st, 2000, according to Ed, that will make that an academic question. Did I answer that correctly, Ed?
A lot fewer people will wake up that morning than we think.
All right. Well, that's another more dire way to put it. Here with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Yeah. Hi, Art. And hi, Ed. This is Dan in Virginia.
Hello, Dan.
I got a three-part question. It has to concern with your Stargate program. Have you established communication with the star beings? And also, have they given you any...
Hold on.
Okay.
One at a time. Answer to the first question, Ed?
Yes.
Wow.
But it's not Stargate, it's Starman.
Sorry. Okay, the answer is yes. Your second question, please.
Have you been getting any information about the future of mankind, and especially the trauma we're going to be going through now?
Nothing on the trauma, only on the future.
Okay.
You said three parts?
Yeah, the third part was, will there be an appearance by these star beings?
Well, that's a really good question, Ed.
It's a very good question indeed, because of another factor. This, in the Western Christian world, we have this term called the false prophet.
Yes.
False prophet is connected with what appears to be a vehicle, a UFO.
You refer to the Antichrist, don't you?
No. Antichrist is a field effect. No, a field just like the idea. It's an idea.
Okay, so a false prophet is what you're saying.
False prophet is actually this thing that I talked about in the past that masquerades as a human being or a being, but in fact it's not something else. Just something else. And it is associated with what appears for all intents and purposes to be something like a flying saucer. It gets a lot of attention worldwide. Mm. People turn to it. We're very concerned about this because the Starman project is working with something, let's call it a system, that is very much connected with rebuilding this planet. And this false prophet appears to take advantage of that idea. So we don't know how this is going to pan out, but we're really concerned. It's a lot of in-house things that we don't usually talk about because it's very worrisome to others.
Well, you always manage to blow me away. And here comes a question out of left field and an answer I didn't expect. I take it, Ed, that if I were to now press you for details of the contact, you couldn't tell me much? Or what could you tell me? Or let me try.
I can tell you this, that it appears to involve, we'll know shortly. I'm leaving on the 7th, next week. I'm leaving on the 7th to Starman site, to our field site in Polynesia. And then on to Micronesia in October to work, to go out to Amelia Earhart's wreckage.
Right.
This site is not, it is a contact site, but the contact, the thing that we know best about it, it involves teleportation. But beam me up, Scotty type of teleportation.
Really?
It doesn't involve, as far as we know, them coming down, but us going up via that method. That's what we know. We have a laser in place. We have all the rest of the stuff ready to go.
I remember you saying you were working on a laser.
You asked where SciTech puts its money. That's where we put our money. Amelia Earhart and Starman.
Wow.
Not in the stock market.
Well, good for SciTech. Good move for SciTech.
But you know how important this is to us, particularly to me. It's our capstone project. I think in some ways, in my mind, everything that we've ever done in remote viewing was a prelude, and if not necessary, to this upcoming event, which I think is the beginning of something new, and I will keep you informed. In fact, I'll keep you informed from my field site next month. I'll let you know what's going on in terms of Earhart. Right now, we're remote viewing Fred Noonan. We're not sure what happened to Amelia Earhart's navigator, Fred Noonan, whether he died in a crash or made it to shore on this particular atoll. And once we complete the remote viewing about Fred Noonan's demise or disappearance, then we'll be ready to do the press release. We want to bring closure to that.
You never fail to blow me away. In every program that I've ever done with you, Ed, you never fail to blow me away. You know what?
In what regard?
In one regard or another, program by program, there's something you say that just blows me away. Now, I knew about Starman, but I never asked you, of course, how far it had proceeded. And here comes a caller asking one simple question, and I'm blown away. So there you are. That's tonight's, I guess, second blowaway. There's two. And the first, of course, was the financial deal. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames and Art Bell. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning to you. Where are you, sir?
Odessa.
Odessa, Texas.
Yes.
All right, you're going to have to yell a little bit. You're not too loud. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Good morning, Major.
Good morning.
I was wondering, have you done much research into the climactic earth changes that are supposed to be coming?
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh.
Only this solar event. That's a. I think that is about the only thing that equates to the term Earth changes that I know fits into that niche. Just that.
All right, caller, you've got your radio on. It's very confusing. You should never have your radio on when you call. Thank you very much. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Howdy, Art.
Howdy.
Yeah, this is Greg up in Bend, Oregon.
Hello, Greg.
I have two questions for Major Ed Dames. One is, I thought we had a large surplus of money. At least the government is telling us we're supposed to have a large surplus of money. How are the bonds supposed to default? And after that, I have another question.
A large surplus of money, sir. I'm not an economist, but while we have a positive yearly deficit, we have a debt that
$300 billion.
Our debt as a nation is in the trillions of dollars. There are arguments about how many trillions it is.
Our current balance of payments is $300.
That's a yearly deficit you're talking about.
Yes. Sir.
Yeah. The debt is gigantic, caller. So does that clarify anything?
Well, we're supposed to have a balanced budget. Is that correct?
Actually, we have a surplus at the moment, but that is as nothing compared to the actual debt. Do you understand the difference?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I do. How though is the bonds going to how are we going to default?
All right.
Well, let me give you an example.
Ed, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour, and that question certainly deserves a good answer, and it will get one when we get back from the break. Clock says I got to do this from the high desert. I'm Art Bell. My guest is Skyjet's Major Ed Dames. We will be right back. Okay, Ed, you heard me recite basically what's been occurring overnight in the markets. Tokyo up, everything else in Asia down. Russia up, everything else in Europe down. And our S&P futures up an incredible 21 a few minutes ago, which indicates the market will open way up. I smell intervention all over the place here.
Well, here's the idiot lesson that I use for myself to explain what's going to happen in the long term here, in the next several months, what's going to begin to happen.
It kind of winds into the question that we left at the bottom of the hour. Yeah, okay.
So here's the idiot lesson.
Sure.
It's the one I use for me. We're going to have a lot of layoffs soon because the Asians are desperate. The Asian market is not there. We're not going to be able to sell airplanes and cars to Asia anymore right now for a long time because there's no money for them to buy. In fact, they're desperately trying to sell everything they can make to us to make money. There's going to be a lot of layoffs. U.S. jobs are going to evaporate very quickly beginning now.
In other words, imports are going to go through the roof.
That's right. And there's a lot of layoffs. So we get let's use you as an example. Let's say that Chancellor Broadcasting says, Art, need to lay you off. And all of a sudden, the payments on your hot tub or whatever can't be made. So what do you do? You go and you hate to do it, but you have to cash in that CD of yours early. Take the hit. You come out with the cash to pay your bills.
Not my hot tub, Ed.
Well, yeah. Well, these are hard times, remember?
Yeah.
So anyway, when you get a lot of people being laid off and a lot of people having to go back and cash in their CDs,
sure,
then the banks have to find cash to pay those CDs.
Even though the banks
are making some money, they need to have the cash.
That's for sure.
Now, responsible banks, as we know, have the majority of their portfolios or a good deal of portfolios in what? The most secure investment in the world, U.S. Treasuries.
That's right.
Okay?
Yep.
So now all of a sudden we have a scenario where, now who's the biggest banks in the world, aren't?
They end
with words like vowels, A and O, Sumitomo,
yep,
etc. The biggest banks in the world are Japanese.
Mitsubishi.
And they're very responsible banks, and they're very heavily invested in U.S. Treasuries.
Yeah, sure they are.
They need cash badly. Get the picture?
Yes, I do.
And they need cash not only badly, but a whole bunch of it, because this is a very big problem. In fact, it's bigger than the world has seen in the last 70 years, probably. That's why I say, watch out. You know, you folks who have saved your money because you listen to SciTech tell you about what's coming, don't throw it away on T-bills. Do something else with it.
Okay, first time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi. Hello there.
Hi, Art. Hi, Ed. This is Eric in California.
California. Okay, Eric.
I had a question, Ed, for you. On an earlier program, you said that you didn't know the source of intelligence that was causing the sun to create these disturbances that we're going to be experiencing. Do you have any more information on that?
We think it's purely physical. We think it's something like an 11,500-year cycle that the sun goes through, and that it is not indeed any intelligence whatsoever.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Natural event, in other words.
Yeah. One other thing is that do you have any information correlating, say, all of these prophecies that are like 300 some odd prophecies around the world of the Blessed Virgin Mary about chastisements that are supposed to be coming in the next few years?
As in the third secret of Fatima? That's what I mean?
That sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Sure, Ed?
No, we don't, but we could remote view the third secret of Fatima.
Really?
Yes, we could do that.
Now there's a project for you, Ed.
Now, let me get this straight.
I'm not exactly sure it's the kind of project you want.
I think it would be quite interesting.
Really?
Yes. Now, let's see. I'd have to research it because I'm not that familiar with what we have to detail this out and make sure that we articulate what we call the remote viewing cue correctly.
See, you're never going to hang up the Dr. Doom hat. You're never going to do it. The third secret of
Fatima. Well, this is pretty sounds pretty intriguing.
It is intriguing, Ed. It's completely intriguing, but I'm telling you right now, the third secret of Fatima is said to be competitive with Ed Dame's worst moments as Dr. Doom.
Was this the one that was reported to the Pope secretly by one of the six girls in Fatima?
Absolutely correct, yes. And held very tightly by popes who will not let it go. It's so horrible, they say. Even Father Malachi Martin, you know Father Martin.
Yes, in fact, I talked with him on your show once.
Yes, that's right, who in fact has had a light stroke, and we continue to get reports that he's holding his own. That's all I can tell everybody. I'm sorry, I wish I knew more. I don't. They're holding all the information very close to their chest back there.
You want to know something?
Father Martin knows the third secret of Fatima, and he said, I'll tell you what he said, Ed. He said, if you can imagine the worst, it's worse than that. That's what he said.
Now, do you think it's a complex of things or just a single thing? You know?
You're the remote viewer, not me. I have no idea what it is.
I mean, is it a whole layout of things or what were the other two secrets? Did they deal with a single event?
No, I believe that this is a cascading of events. And that's, I guess that's the best, closest
yes,
answer.
Yes, we could actually break it out into its component parts if it was a complex. It sounds pretty intriguing.
I knew you couldn't resist that. I knew it. I
want to tell you something that's very synchronistic, very interesting. I never told this to Father Malachi. Our vice president, Joni Durf.
Yes.
Her ex-husband was actually played. He's a movie actor. He played the Gemini Killer in Exorcist III.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
That's extremely interesting. Yes. All right, Ed. Here we go. A lot of people waiting. Wildcard line. You're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi.
First-time callers, area 702-727-1222. Now, okay, no, you didn't blow it. I erased it for you. So let us begin again. Your first name only, please.
Jerry.
Jerry, where are you?
San Diego.
San Diego. Okay, go right ahead.
Yes, for the major, I had a question. Do you believe that Nostradamus practiced remote viewing, or do you believe that he was just a prophet with...
Oh, what a good question.
Abilities into the 20th, or, you know.
Yeah, very good question.
It is. I don't know, but I do know this, and that we can take some of the most controversial quatrains in Nostradamus's prophecies, or whatever they're called, the quatrains themselves, and we can subject a quatrain, let's say quatrain 19 or 95, we can remote view it and place the details. In fact, Joni Durf and I were going to write a book called Through His Eyes, where we would do just this. Place the quatrains in contemporary vernacular so that we could perceive what he was actually seeing and detailing at the time using his own mind. Now, whether he was remote viewing the way we do it or whether he was doing something else, truly prophetic, I don't know. But I do know we can do that the same way that we can subject the idea as a topic, the third secret of Fatima, to TRV, detecting remote viewing, and then break it out into its detail.
Okay, well, he is, of course, extremely well-recognized prophet. And Edgar Cayce would be another, the sleeping prophet he was called. Do you think it's possible that these men divined their prophecy from the same realm that remote viewers move in to see what they see. That's the best way I can think to put it.
My best guess is yes.
Yeah, that'd be my best guess, too. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Yes, hi. This is Morgan in Charlotte.
Hi, Morgan. How's Charlotte?
Oh, Charlotte. Hot and lousy. I've got a comment and a question.
All right.
I lose you at 5 o'clock, so I haven't heard the current conversation. However, as regards to the group effort to make wonderful things happen,
yes.
I must say I've been a bit of a psychic and a prophet for a number of years and have had a bit of experience with that, both singularly and in groups.
Yes.
And I think there's a real simple answer to the quandary that you're in.
And what's that?
I think the simple answer is that when you approach a problem,
yes.
say Hurricane Bonnie,
yes.
you don't say, you know, make a prayer to don't let Bonnie hit the coast. That's a very dangerous thing to do, as you think. I think the answer is to say, we have a problem here. And let's devote all of our energy into creating the highest good for everybody concerned. And I think when you do that, you release the danger.
Well, that's, you know, that's, I appreciate your input. But it doesn't help me in my quandary. In other words, for each one like you that I have who said what you just said, I've got somebody else saying the exact opposite. And I'm sorry, that doesn't help me personally come to any decision, because I make decisions based on, I try to make decisions based on things I know to be true. And I can't say that I know anything about this to be true right now. I can only tell you what I don't know. You know, we did the experiments. I'm leaning very heavily toward believing that we really did prove something. And beyond that, I don't know enough to say I've got an easy answer. I don't have an easy answer. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, Ed. Hi, Art. My name is Joel. I'm in Fairfax, California.
Yes, sir.
And let's see. Ed, I've been listening to you on Art for a couple of years, and I agree with you that the only way to survive is in a community of like-minded people, hopefully growth-oriented people. And I have a degree in agriculture. I know how to grow food. I have some friends who are good builders and other people who are technically talented and other friends who are healers. But basically the only one who really believes this is all going to hit the fan real soon. So it looks like it's up to me to go to Polynesia, buy a place with the lava tube or cave and get feed supplies and equipment and all that stuff. And that's like a fortune.
No, the West Edge. Consider, I submit to you that you really need to consider the western edge of Glacier National Park, the center of mass, Whitefish, Montana, that area, and then north into the Canadian Rockies. That's where we have found, doing a lot of work, a lot of TRV work, to be fairly or eminently survivable area.
It
will be.
That's living underground, though, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's living in canyons. I've outlined the reasons why on our show. There's a lot of reasons why, but mostly it's there's a lot of fresh water there. There are some caves. If you look at my website, you'll see some of the cave complexes there. There are other people that are moving that have moved up there already,
mm-hmm.
That's the one place we know of that where there will be a population of like-minded.
The jet stream won't come down. I thought the whole northern hemisphere was going to be, 200 mile an hour wind.
Even if it does, the canyons there are so deep. Same thing with Switzerland and Liechtenstein. The canyons are very deep, and if winds are coming down and hitting the sides of the mountains,
right.
the canyons have still air in them. Any hole will have still air. That's why Kiva's worked for the Anasazi.
Now, can I remote view myself, let's say, in 9 months from now and see where I will be?
That's a kind of an interesting question. Yeah, Ed. Can people do? Can you do that? Can people do that?
With the Module 2 skills, that's what we I've asked people to use these skills for as soon as they start to master them, to remote view what we term a sanctuary from these kinds of events.
So they can find their own sanctuaries.
That's right, and that's what we're helping them do on our website.
All right. Well, we're way out of time. Your website's available as a link from mine always. I think that link is eternally there. It's very prominently there under your name right now. If people wish to order remote viewing tapes, you have those. Is it a 24-hour number, Ed?
The 24-hour, the one I gave you, is 24-hour. And if they wish to speak with a live operator from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the number is 1-888-234-2500.
You better say it again.
Okay, live operator 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. 1-888-234-2500.
Or the other 800 number, 24 hours a day.
24 hours a day is 1-888-878-0333. And Art, I'm really intrigued by the third secret. I think we're going to do it. I'll leave that on for a little while longer.
I knew it.
The curiosity killed the cat, and this one's just a little bit too attractive.
All right, my friend. Thank you so much, Ed, again, for being here tonight. Thank you.
The pleasure's mine.
And good night. All right, that's Major Ed Dames, folks. Okay. It's going to be an interesting day, to say the least. I have not booked a guest for tonight because events are too fluid, too unsure. We'll see what happens today. That's it from the high desert tonight. That's all there is. Good night.